Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. You know, we talk about a variety of topics on this program. We talk about a lot of politics, but we talk about lifestyle and culture. We also talk about fishing from time to time. And all of these things are part of the American experience, my experience. And I wanted to reflect on some of these things with my next guest, who is a historian, a patriot, a guy who does deep thinking, more than I do. Victor Davis Hanson is an author as well, has a new book, The Case for Trump. Victor, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. You know, I've read your columns. I've read things that you've written on many occasions, and you are insightful, and you look beyond the headlines, and you dig deeper. And with so many things going on, I don't even know where to begin. You look at the liberal agenda, for example, which includes, you know, free college, government health care, gun bans, allowing illegals to vote, abortion on demand anytime up until birth and maybe even after. I mean, so many places that we could start the conversation. And, of course, there's the ongoing assault against Donald Trump, the president. Even though we don't have any evidence that he's done anything wrong, Nancy Pelosi finally admitting she has no interest in pursuing impeachment. The reason being is there's nothing to pursue, and at least somebody's being honest. But with so many places to start, where would you dive in?
Well, I think I'd like to, and I discuss this in the book, that in 2020, it's going to be like 2016. We forget that Trump did not run in a vacuum. He ran against Hillary Clinton, and her sins and liabilities were especially well-suited for Trump, because for everything they accused Trump of, she had done something similar but much worse, and he could argue he was in private life while she was a public servant, whether it was financial impropriety or allegations of womanizing the part of Bill Clinton versus Trump.
Sure.
So he kind of trumped her. And I think the thing in 2016, to get onto your topic, he's going to be able to say, not only do I have a record that I didn't have in 2016, but more importantly, I'm the only thing between the American voter and socialism. I don't think I should say socialism. It's more holistic than that. I mean, when you add in reparations and infanticide and abolition of ICE and cancellation of student debt, Medicare for all, wealth tax, all the stuff in addition to what you mentioned, we've never seen a comprehensive package like that in this country's history.
Well, we've heard it whispered. I mean, we've seen it whispered, you know.
We've whispered it. Yeah.
But now they're right out in the open in front of God and everybody. You're absolutely right. They're right out in front of God and everybody saying, listen, we don't want guns. We want to raise the taxes on the wealth tax, a death tax. Open borders are fine. The Green New Deal, which is nothing more than a government takeover of just about everything. I mean, that's really what they're talking about here. And Nancy Pelosi seems to be completely unable to keep the kids under control. The House is chaos. People have talked about the Republicans being in chaos, but the Democrats are completely out of control.
Yeah, and I think most people say, well, they'll come to their senses and nominate Joe Biden, who's not necessarily a sober candidate. But the point I'm making is, even if they try to flee from some of the more moderate, I don't see very many of them try to flee from that package, there's going to be an intense pressure in the primaries, especially the debates and the convention, to force those people to have their fingerprints on these issues. And every one of those issues that we mentioned has a minus 50% approval rating. And so I don't know how quite they're going to get out of that, because it's almost as like they're in the French Revolution with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Each radical revolutionary position on Monday, on Tuesday, it's seen as reactionary. They go further and further at a lightning rate of speed. I mean, well, first it was, let's not finish the wall, or let's not build the wall. Then it was, Beto, let's tear down the wall. And let's have cap and trade, and let's start to have restrictions and more solar on combustion engines. And let's abolish the entire industry and modern life that's based on the internal combustion engine. And we could do that with abortion. Every issue is reaching its logical extreme trajectory. And after you get to that point, what do you do after that? If you're for infanticide, where do you go next? Is it just... Who knows?
Well, you know where you go next. I mean, it's pretty clear. Victor Davis Hanson here. He teaches at Stanford, Cal State University Fresno, at Hillsdale. When you're on vacation, you go to Hillsdale to teach because you're a guy that knows how to have fun. We talked about that before we came on. But as you look at some of these things, the hordes are always at the wall, aren't they? And no pun intended on that. But the hordes are always at the wall. And what I mean by that, those that want to tear down Western civilization. I'm not referring to the wall in Mexico, but I'm talking about the wall is a, you know, is an idea. Because they're always at the wall, and Marxism and socialism And these things always get reapplied and reimagined to some extent and resold, even though they failed 100% of the time over more than a century now. We have plenty to look at, whether it's Cuba or Venezuela or Russia or Cambodia. It doesn't matter. They always fail. Government-directed systems always fail. Free markets succeed. And yet you have people like Ocasio-Cortez out there selling it as if it's some sort of utopian dream again. And we know better, except that we haven't taught our students and our children very well, is one of my concerns. I don't think we've taught people very well at all, based on what I'm seeing and hearing.
No, and I think that's the point. When you have half the population not only went into hawk for an aggregate $1.5 trillion debt, they didn't get much in return. So if you add the average young hipster, and that's who we're talking to, sort of a Life of Julie or Pajama Boy profile, if you ask them where, point to Venezuela on a map, or just tell me who Karl Marx was, or what is the word Soviet Union, they won't be able to tell you. I can attest to that, because I'm on a campus, one of the best campuses. There's a whole generation of young people, maybe 20% of the population, or at least the electorate, who are both ignorant and arrogant, because what they have been taught were courses with the word studies in it, peace studies, environmental studies, race studies, critical gender studies. And it teaches them deductively to have a position that's predetermined and intolerant, but there's no information, or they have no ability to be inductive to support it. So they just go out and blurt this stuff out, as Representative Omar Tlaib, and they have no history, they have no knowledge of what most Americans feel about anti-Semitism. They have no knowledge that most people support a democratic free market system in Israel versus its neighbors. They just blurt out something they think they've heard in a political science class or saw in the free speech area, and they expect everybody to agree with them. And what they don't realize is all three, just to take those three representatives, have very uniform congressional districts. They were mostly ethnic identity politics districts. They were far left. And somehow the Democratic Party interpreted that as that they had a mandate when they had a very small sliver, even at the Democratic Party.
Right.
And they're going sort of McGovern in 1972, when Nixon was kind of vulnerable by 1970. And instead, they went McGovern Woodstock Nation against the silent majority. And that was,
well, that's exactly right.
The country's changed, but I don't think it has that much.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And the fact of the matter is, where I live in Michigan, or just across Lake Michigan and Wisconsin, or back to the east in Pennsylvania, those three states were key, obviously, in electing Donald Trump in 2016. And you pointed out that he ran against the sins of Hillary. And now he's going to run against the sins of Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and that group of freshman lawmakers that Nancy Pelosi cannot seem to reel in for anything. Because after the 2016 election, I said on this program the following day two things. Number one, for the Republicans, you need to figure out how you won Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and reconnect there, because if you don't, you're going to be in deep trouble come 2020. And for the Democrats, the warning was easy, because historically speaking, the Democrats always overplay their hand. They always go out, like you said, mandate. They don't have a mandate. They picked up 40 seats, and some would be questionable when it comes to ballot harvesting and so forth. That's a discussion for a different day. But they picked up 40 seats, historically speaking. That's not huge. We're here with Victor Davis Hanson, who works as a professor at Stanford, Cal State Fresno, and Hillsdale when he's on vacation, here on the Steve Gruber Show. So when you look at them overplaying their hand, and I see people like Rahm Emanuel now come out, who's not exactly a stark conservative, saying you're way out of control, and if you continue down this path, you will lose in 2020. That's what Rahm Emanuel, the outgoing mayor of Chicago, very liberal individual, by the way, says. You've gone far too far. What do you make of that?
Well, I agree with you, and they haven't studied that 40-seat pickup, because about half of them were in districts that Trump won, and they ran candidates, a few of them with military experience, that really ran on, I'm a moderate, I want to find a workable health care for you. They didn't really attack Trump personally, and they said, you know, there's been too much vitriol on both sides. And that would, you would think that because they were the most successful in flipping those districts, they would kind of emulate that message. But they're not only, if they continue down this trajectory, they're not only going to lose the presidential election, they may lose those House seats, because people, I just don't think people, when Donald Trump says, whatever you think of me, and I think his popularity is about where Clinton's was and Obama's was at this time in their presidency. The beginning of the third year, and they both got reelected.
Yeah, that's correct. I think you're exactly right.
I have a record, and the record of 2017 and 2020 will not be socialism.
Well, it will not be socialism. And you talk about those swing districts. Mine is one of them. Michigan's 8th congressional district was picked up by a woman with governmental experience in the Pentagon and so forth, Alyssa Slotkin. But she has not governed thus far as a moderate. She sold it just like you described and didn't attack Trump that much. But now when they get in there, I mean, this America First or whatever they call this thing they're trying to put forth to control voting in the states and so forth. And that's just another giant power grab by the Democrats, by the left. And it'll be rejected. And you look at everything that's going on and they support these things. And they can't even pass a resolution calling out one of their own for anti-Semitic remarks that happened in January, February, March. They'll also happen in April, May, and June. Trust me, mark it down. It's going to happen again. It's the most predictable thing ever.
Yeah, and I think that they're also worried, and they should be, because here in California, my district, just like yours, it flipped from a Republican moderate to a Democratic moderate by a very few, I think it was 700 votes. And then T.J. Fox went to Washington, and he did just what your representative did. He went the whole Cortez route, more or less. But Trump here in California, and it won't matter in California, but it might matter in other swing states, when you have minority unemployment at record lows, you can really see the difference in the San Joaquin Valley. It's in a frenzy of hiring, building, construction. And then when you curb that, a lot of people don't want illegal immigration because it drives down their wages. And then when you add into that mix this infanticide, and then you add in further that these remarks that were widely reported that Kamala Harris and Feinstein said about Catholics, Knights of Columbus, Trump doesn't need to get 50% of the Latino vote or 50% of the African-American. He just needs about 15% of the African-American vote and about 40% of the Latino vote. And then the Democratic calculus doesn't work.
Well, the Democratic calculus is in trouble. I believe
it won't work.
Well, Professor, I believe that it's in trouble anyway. I mean, look at the – if I were going to bet today on the left, I would say Bernie Sanders has the inside track pretty simply because he has a very hardcore base. It may only be 15 or 18 points, but that's all he needs to win Iowa. When there's 12 or 14 people in the race by then, he picked up $6.5 million in the first 24 hours of his second bid for the presidency. And with 15 or 18%, he'll win Iowa. He'll win New Hampshire. And then he's got the momentum. So right now, you talk about McGovern being, you know, so far left. I hope Bernie Sanders is the candidate. And I hope he gets crushed because he, you know, he is the antithesis of what America is. America is about individualism, you know, finding our own way, our own course in life, not looking for a handout, not looking for the government. We don't need a central planner. I don't need a central planner in my life. I don't think most Americans do.
I agree, and I think one thing Trump's advisors have been pretty good is that he's made this argument that socialism really isn't socialism for the top elite, as we see in Venezuela and the old Soviet Union and Cuba. So he says, and he's already pointed out that Bernie Sanders has three homes, that his wife was involved in a really nefarious plot or scheme when she was a college president to make a lot of money as the school was bankrupt on a land deal. Ocasio-Cortez does not live by her Green Deal mandate, at least that's for us, not for her. And then when you add in all of these tech left-wing billionaires and their private jets and their walled estates, he's really making a populist argument that these people are going to sell you socialism, but socialism is not what you think. It's a way for the elite to enjoy material benefits and luxuries and affluence and be not subject to the consequences of their ideology. You are going to be subject, not them.
That's correct.
And that's a good message because that really resonates to people who don't know much about socialism.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Professor, and that is when these droves of people come across the southern border, whether they're from Mexico or Guatemala or El Salvador or wherever, and they come over 1,000, 2,000 a day, day after day, because we don't have a secure border and it gets worse. And now that the push is bigger than ever because people on the south side of the border believe that Trump will end up getting it enforced, will get it closed. Those people all come from nations that are left of center. Most of those people come from very socialist nations, whether it's Mexico or Guatemala or El Salvador. So they already come here with a mindset of being left. I think that's very dangerous for America.
Yeah, and I think that the old Karl Rove Bush rationale that we're bringing in family values voters who, because of abortion or family values, are going to vote Republican is either fallacious or it won't happen to the third generation. But what happens is people come in here, and 27% of the state that I live in were not born in the United States. So people come in here with an ex, and one quarter of all people who are undocumented are on public assistance. One out of every three welfare recipients in the nation's in California. And suddenly we were a prosperous state. Now 22% of the people live below the poverty line. We're importing poverty. So we haven't seen anything yet, because when the weather warms up, we've got literally hundreds of thousands of people who are going to start in these caravans, and they're going to start hitting us in May, June, July. And they're coming on the idea that the left in the United States will find a way to so demonize Trump, either through court decisions or just public pure media, that they will be allowed to set one foot in the United States. And once they do that, they'll be quote-unquote refugees. And I don't think that's going to be appealing to most Americans.
No, I think you're right. I don't think that's appealing to most Americans at all.
I don't think it's a winning issue.
No, I happen to agree with you. Victor Davis Hanson is here. He's the author of the new book, The Case for Trump, here on the Steve Gruber Show. So, Victor, Professor, whichever you prefer, I didn't actually ask you. Let me ask you this. Let's make the case for Trump. We've talked about what's wrong with the other argument. It's defective in so many places on so many levels. That's fine. But let's talk about Trump and what he has accomplished. Because in my experience in looking at all of this, the first president that I voted for was Ronald Reagan. Okay, and so Ronald Reagan is revered as a conservative icon, a guy who brought morning back into America, and he won 49 states as he cleaned house and cleaned up pretty well. But nobody in my lifetime, maybe not in the 20th century, has governed as conservatively as Donald Trump has in the first 2 years, right or wrong.
No, I agree, and I try to be dispassionate and analytical in the book, and I just said, let's just take six or seven issues. How about judges? Has he appointed a David Souter or put up the nomination to Harriet Meyer? No, they're all pretty strict traditionalists and constructionists. On energy, could you possibly improve on the fracking? Well, you can, because if you allow more leases on federal land, open up Anwar, build the pipelines, then you get 3 million more barrels of oil per day than when Obama left office. We're now the world's largest oil and gas producer and soon to be the largest exporter of both. If you look at deregulation, we've never had, even Reagan did not deregulate at the pace that Trump did. We hadn't had annualized GDP at near 3%, I think it's 2.9 since 2006.
Correct.
We were told it was impossible. And then when you add record peacetime unemployment at the levels of 3.8, record low minority unemployment at a time when you're having low interest and low inflation, that's pretty good. We haven't seen that. He has a problem with his base and with people like you and me on the debt and spending, and he's going to have to address that. And that's what he's going to try to do now with this 5% cut in domestic programs.
No, it doesn't look like it actually locks in trillion-dollar deficits with that budget. So I do have a lot of issues with that budget. But when it comes to 3.4% wage growth, you forgot that part. Wages are going up by almost 3.5%. Everybody's working here in Michigan. Yeah. There are 9,000 open jobs in heavy construction right now to build roads and bridges and infrastructure. 9,000 jobs open because we sent everybody to school to get these silly gender studies degrees instead of teaching people how to be carpenters and concrete workers and plumbers and electricians and things that people actually need.
Yeah, same is true here. I mean, I'm in the second poorest county in California. And when I went in the town the last 10 years, it was completely dead. The last year, I go in and I see a building going up, another building. And I know one of the guys is doing it, and all of a sudden it didn't go up very fast. And I ask him, are you running out of money or what? No, I no sooner hire a roofer, and somebody comes by and says, I can get you a job tiling for $2 more an hour. And then a guy comes by and said, I'm short long-haul truckers, I'm short welders, and they can't keep labor. And this is, I've never seen anything like it, and this is in a highly regulated, controlled California economy. But I don't know what exactly it was, the policies or whether Trump's message let loose the animal spirits when you don't say you didn't build that, it's not the time to profit, you've made to some point you made enough money, versus go out and make as much money and help people. And
that's exactly right.
Got through to people, and that's underappreciated. It's kind of tragic that Trump for a variety of reasons, the fear he instills and the fact that he's kind of an eccentric person never gets credit for the good that he's done. And I think that frustrates him. But
well, clearly it does. I mean, he's an egomaniac to some extent. You can't deny that he's an egomaniac. I get that. And I don't care. I had a lot of bosses in my life that were egomaniacs, and they were hard to deal with. And you know what? They were signing the checks. And you know what I did? What have they told me to do? He was the boss. I got done what they needed done. But what we don't teach kids today are the writings of Adam Smith or Hazlitt or Friedman or Isaiah Berlin. We don't teach kids the way we should.
Or we don't teach kids about history. I mean, I think Omar Bradley was a sober and judicious, good family man, and George Patton was having an affair with his stepniece. He was profane and vulgar, but had he not been in charge of Third Army and you'd put his superior, Omar Bradley, in charge of Third Army, thousands of people would have been dead.
That's right.
So morality is a very complex issue. When you get 3% economic growth, that translates into millions of jobs and millions of young people who have leverage over an employer that never have had it. And that's a little bit more moral than whether he says horse face or little rocket man.
Or
now, those things bother me. But what really bothers me are politicians who sound so proper and prim, and then they wreak havoc on the American people.
You know what doesn't bother me? Here's what doesn't. It doesn't bother me when he tells the truth. My father used to say to me, Steve, do you want me to make you feel good or tell me the truth? Tell you the truth. Tell me the truth because it's just easier to deal with. And, you know, when Donald Trump says this is an asshole country or that's an asshole country, you know what it is? I've been to some of those countries. He's exactly right. Victor Davis Hanson, it's been an absolute honor. I know you've got to get on to some other interviews here, so I don't want to keep you any longer, but I want to say this. 2020 is just over the horizon. I'll give you the last word. You can sum it up, and then we'll tell people where to find the case for Trump, your new book.
Well, barring a depression or a major unpopular war, I don't think you're going to get either. I think he's got about a 55% chance of winning because he's got A, a record, B, he's getting better in his speaking and the people around him like Bolton and Pompeo, and then C, he's got an opposition that's going to make Hillary Clinton look like a right winger. I mean, this new socialist agenda is going to be very hard for the Democrats to moderate. They're headed over the cliff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Victor Davis Hanson, author of the brand new book, The Case for Trump, a senior fellow in military history at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, professor emeritus of classics at California State University, Fresno, and a guest speaker at Hillsdale College in Michigan. He does that when he's on vacation. Sir, thank you so much.